Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and this podcast is ranked in the top 2% of the most popular podcasts globally. And do you want to know why? It's because of my incredible guest. I am honored and blessed to share time with people who are at the top of their game, and they show up here willing to help you get to where you want to be in life and in business. These are not people who hold back. Their goal is to share with us the essence of peak performance. So today I get to welcome back to the show Judy Hoberman, whose stated mission is to help one woman a day by following an important philosophy. And this is a quote: women want to be treated equally, not identically. And when she was here last, we talked about what she terms the lonely leader. And you can find that episode wherever you consume your favorite podcast. So Judy Hoberman, I'm sorry, that's Hamilton is an ass. He thinks this is a podcast, P-A-W-D. I'll just apologize for him and get it out of the way. But Judy is the president of Judy Hoberman and Associates, which is a company focused on empowering professional women. I'm going to have to kill him. She is an international speaker, trainer, executive coach, author, radio show host, and a mentor. And with over 30 years of experience in business, she has gained knowledge and a sense of humor about how men and women lead, sell, manage, and recruit differently. Judy is known for her work in combining sales and leadership principles, believing that leadership and sales go hand in hand, and that without the one, the other is complete. She is also the founder of two companies, Walking on the Glass Floor and Selling in a Skirt, which focuses on empowering women in leadership and sales roles. By the way, I have her book, Walking on the Glass Floor, Seven Essential Qualities of Women Who Lead, and I highly recommend it. Judy, welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio, and I apologize for my 20-pound feline office assistant, Hamilton, is an ass. He has his moments.
Oh, I'm excited to be here, and I love that he's on your podcast.
I mean, he did get off the desk. That is him. If anybody could hear him, he is two rooms away. That's how loud he is. So I'm sorry. Listen, let's recap. What is the lonely leader? Let's go back just a bit.
So the lonely leader is a term that I use because there are many, many women in positions, in leadership and executive positions. And once they get there, they have some challenges. I mean, we all have challenges, but female executives are more susceptible to being lonely as the top because some of them are trailblazers. Some of them are known as the first. But here's the thing that we always hear about. The questions that people say is like, who can I share my frustrations with that I trust? And is there anyone that I can talk about confidential matters openly? And what about the ideas that haven't made it to my whiteboard? Does anybody else take them and say that they're theirs? And will I be judged for whatever reason that is? And where can I be vulnerable without being considered weak? And am I valued for the right reasons? Those are what we call the lonely leader, because those are the things that constantly travel through their brains and mine too.
Well, and you don't have to be part of a corporation or even a small company. We do that all by ourselves.
That's right.
I'm a solopreneur, and I'm constantly going, who can I talk with? Who will, you know, say, Denise, well, you know, here's some ideas, here's some thoughts, or Denise, give it a rest, quit whining. We need that too.
Absolutely. And so it's, you know, when I talk about executive women, I'm talking about women in positions of leadership. And you can be a leader as a solopreneur because you're leading the most important person, yourself. So I use those simultaneously. But yes, you do not have to be in corporate. You can be a solopreneur. It's basically the position that you term yourself.
Absolutely. And I think we get lonely. Listen, I am a highly committed introvert. Everybody knows this. Mm-hmm. I like people just fine for 59 and three quarter minutes. But after that, I have to go. I'm tired. It wears me out. But I find myself when I'm paying attention, I'm a bit lonely because who do I talk with?
Mm-hmm.
Who do I trust? That's the biggie.
Right,
You know, who is in, like you, in my position where, you know, you're not alone. You have to understand that you're not alone. There are people who can go, hey, well, how about this? Or what about this? Or sometimes just offer a listening ear. Sometimes that's all we need.
And the truth is, you are not alone, because I have surveyed hundreds of women in leadership position, and these are real feelings. And when I share that they are not alone, you can almost hear them taking that sigh of relief, knowing it's not just them. And, you know, a lot of times you don't have that woman. You don't have somebody that is going to say to you, Denise, you're not by yourself. You know, we're in this together. And people just don't do that, especially when they are in positions that they do have this leadership title. That's the hard part, because now you're second guessing yourself and you're doing all these things that make you feel less than, and that ridiculous imposter syndrome shows up, even though we have evicted her once or twice before. So, oh, yeah. You know, there's no manual. There's no manual. And that's where, you know, people like you, people like me, we do come in and we do talk to people, whether it's on a podcast, whether it's, you know, coaching. But sometimes you just have to realize and feel that you're no longer part of this one person group. You're part of this very large group. I'm not saying that's the best thing, but we are part of this very large group of women that do feel like that.
And, you know, not, I don't want to just say this is for women only, because it's
not.
I have very trusted male advisors mm-hmm. that I trust with my heart.
Yep.
And they're rare. I will say they're rare, but that's more down to me.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
There's differences between men and women. So you have to, define what's acceptable in those differences and what's not.
Right. And I always look for the men that champion and advocate and sponsor women, because those are the men that a lot of people can trust, you know. I mean, you can trust a lot of people to a certain extent, but those, the ones that step up and say, you know, do you know about this? Because there's an opportunity for you. Or, you know, let me introduce you to this person. And a lot of times those are men that are doing that. And so I never think that you can do this alone. I never do. And alone doesn't mean just women. So alone does mean men. So I definitely agree with you.
Judy, what started you down this path? I mean, was there a moment when you just went, I'm a leader, I'm in this position, now what? When did you start paying attention, I guess, is my real question, and say, hey, I'm not actually alone?
Well, many times I still do feel alone, you know, I do. But what started it all was I was in financial services. I was the only female. I was not popular, you know, because the only reason I was hired, and I know it now, was because I checked a box. And nobody really wanted me there, because really what they were saying behind my back was, you know, just let her go, let her do what she needs to do. She's not going to make it. And then we can say we had one. Those were the kind of comments. And so finally I would say to them, hey, why don't you just say it to my face? Which, you know, of course I was less popular, but the truth of the matter is But once I started, you know, in the only thing you're judged on when you're in sales, the only thing are your numbers. That's it. They don't care about who you are, what you look like. You're only judged on your numbers. And so when my numbers started to increase and increase and increase, all of a sudden they had questions for me, like, how did you do that? And what did you say? And why do you have so many, you know, clients? And why doesn't anybody fall off the books with you? And then when I started recruiting, how did you get so many people? And so then they started listening. So long story short, I ended up with three agencies of my own. And then I went to the corporate side. And that was a very different feeling and a different situation, because when I was in the field, they all loved me. But once I came inside, I heard what they really thought about salespeople. And it was basically because we made a lot of money in the field. And I would say, you know what, just get licensed. You can go out there. You can go make some money. It's not easy, but it's also not hard if you just do what you're supposed to do. And of course, nobody wants to do that. So then I would say, hey, then stop picking on me all the time. So I was in the Mean Girl movie for a long time. And then I decided I had enough, because I wasn't feeling very well. And I just knew I wasn't in the right spot for me. And so I resigned. And that's another whole story about when you resign. But that was the moment, because I didn't know what I was going to do. I really didn't. I wasn't 20. I wasn't married at the time. My kids were grown. So here I was all by myself. And if you want to talk about the lonely leader, there it was right there. I had nobody to talk to except the people that I just resigned from. That's not networking. That's craziness. And so what I did was I found a coach. I had never had a coach before, and I definitely never had a female that would be able to guide me anywhere. And so we sat down and I said to her, what I would have wanted was a woman that would have said to me, hey, here's what you need to do. You know, I'm a single mom. I have two kids. I'm 100% commission. Here's, you know, don't make the left turn, make the right turn, or, you know, just have somebody to talk to. And there wasn't anybody like that. There was no coaching. There was no mentoring. And when I started getting more successful, I was the coach. I was the mentor. So what I did was I said to her, my coach, I said, I want to be that woman. I want to do that for other women. And that's where, you know, helping one woman a day came from. And so I became that woman. And because I was the lonely leader and because I was really by myself, I also was a trailblazer. I was the first of many things. That's how it happened. And so that's where a lonely leader came from. And that's where all the things that I do came from, really.
How did you find a female coach? I had, and I'm asking maybe on a personal level, one of my very early business coaches a long time ago was a female, which was kind of unheard of back then. And I liked her. I really did. I don't know that she was a great business coach, but she would ask me questions that had me going, what?
Yeah, right.
And one of the questions, and I'll never forget this because she took a toothpick and stabbed me right in the heart with it. But she asked me, she was listening to me probably whine and cry and complain. And she said, Denise, what are you tolerating? I just went silent. Yeah. And I went, I had never asked myself that. So the next day I was in a 10 hour car ride with my friend Maggie. We were going to Atlanta, Georgia, which is, you know, 10 hours away, mostly because once you're in Atlanta, you're four hours of driving through Peachtree. It's crazy.
Yeah.
<over there. laughs> But I was telling her that, and she, fortunately, we were parked. I think we were going into a restroom or some, you know, I don't know where we were going, but her head swiveled and she looked at me. She said, like I did, huh?
Right.
So we spent the rest of that drive dissecting what we were tolerating, and it was ugly what we were tolerating.
Yeah. And yes. And so once it's obvious to you, then you either change it or you don't. And the choice is yours. Yeah.
We both did, but I changed big time within, I mean, we were even in Atlanta and I was changing already, saying, I'm not going to do this. I got divorced from that car ride. It was coming anyway, but that just said, I'm not tolerating this anymore. I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was at an event. It was a conference, and my sister-in-law lived in New Jersey at the time, and I was in Dallas. And so the conference was in Baltimore. And so kind of, sort of, it was in the middle. And I said to her, let's go to Baltimore for the weekend. We'll go to the conference. If it's not good, we just won't stay and we'll just hang out together. She said, great, that sounds good. So we go to this conference, and it was called Get Radical. And I had like a regular general admission ticket, and so did she. And for some reason, my name was pulled out of a hat, and I won a VIP ticket. So I'm sitting in the front now. So this woman, Doreen, she was wonderful, but I swear to God, she was talking directly to me. And when you think of Get Radical, and you grew up in, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, and you know what Get Radical is like, take off your bra because now you're being radical as a woman. Well, she went way beyond that. And so it was so radical that was on a Saturday and a Sunday, that on Monday I gave my resignation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I called her. Well, first of all, they didn't take my resignation for 8 weeks, but I gave them to a certain date. I said, I'll stay 4 weeks, but it turned out to be 8 weeks. But anyway, the day I actually left, my phone was blowing up. People are saying, oh my God, you can't leave, because if you leave, we have to leave. I'm like, I'm not that important. Don't worry about it. And then I called Doreen and I said, I don't know if you remember me. She goes, yes, I do, actually. I said, I want to hire you as my coach. And And so she became my coach. She didn't take any of my nonsense. Like, I knew better than anybody. I could just do that. Whatever I thought I could get away with, I didn't. I couldn't. But I remember her saying to me, "So what are we going to build?" And I told her the kind of company I wanted to build. And she said, "Well, how are you going to get there?" What I said to her was, I had just seen a movie with Michelle Pfeiffer, and she built this really upscale, exclusive club on an island. And I thought, wow, that sounds like so cool. So I said, that's what I want to do. It's a bar and everything else. I had no idea why I said that other than I just watched this movie. So she goes, "Well," she says, "where, how are you going to get there?" And I said, "By plane." She goes, "No, how are you going to get there?" I said, "Yeah, by boat." She goes, "Judy, how are you going to get there?" I said, "I don't know what you're asking me." She said, "You can't just go from sitting here with me today and have this club, this bar, whatever. So how are you going to get there?" I went, "Oh.
Action steps. How are you going to make it happen?" See, that's a biggie for people like you and like me. We've got these fantastic ideas. We can see them in their head. I think in pictures, it's like, okay, now what? Now I have to actually do the action steps. And that's oftentimes, and I'm ashamed to admit it, when I'll just walk off and go make a gumbo.
Right, because it's hard. It's hard. Yeah. Well, she had me in a room with whiteboards all around the whole room. And I was not a whiteboard girl. And when I saw whiteboards, I start to sweat because that's you just tell me where to show up and I'm good. I don't need the whiteboard. And it was like hieroglyphics, you know? But the funniest thing with her was we were probably into working together about, I don't know, maybe 3 months or so. And she said, "You know, you really need to write a book." And I said, have no desire, not writing a book. She said, "No, you really need to write a book." And I said, "I really don't want to. And I don't care if it's going to be number one. I don't care anybody. I don't want to write a book." She said, "Listen, you've got 30 years of experience. You need to write a book and we'll do it together. We'll figure it all out." And I said, "I don't want to write a book." She goes, "Okay, don't write a book. However, on our next visit, how about if you write the names of the chapters, if you were going to write a book?" And all I said was, I never said yes. I never said no. Next session comes. We do our thing. We're talking and everything else. She asked me how I'm doing with all the things we talked about. And then she said, "Read it." I said, "Read what?" She said, "Read the names of the chapters." I said, "Excuse me?" She goes, "You didn't do it, did you?" And I said, she said, "Okay, can you do me a favor?" And I said, "Yes," because I really adored this woman. She said, "How long have you been living in Dallas?" And I said, "A couple of years." She goes, "Do you know the busiest intersection?" I said, "Yeah." She goes, "Here's what I want you to do. I want you to get in your car. I want you to drive to that busy intersection. I want you to stop your car and roll down the window. I want you to take your wallet and I want you to throw it out the window. I want you to roll up your window and I want you to drive home." I said, "Well, that's really the stupidest thing I've ever heard." And she said, "Well, that's what you do to me in every session."
Oh my God.
And I burst into tears. I thought, I just disrespected the woman that I adore, who really wants to help me. And I couldn't even breathe. And I apologized 100 times. And she goes, "No, I didn't say it for you to apologize. I'm saying that, why are you paying me to coach you if you don't do what we talk about?" And I said, I understand. I do. I understand. I am so sorry. And I'm crying and I'm crying and I'm crying. So guess who had the chapters the next session?
You
and
did.
Guess who wrote the book? Oh yeah, I did. Because then I started listening to her. She made so much sense. She said, once you take yourself out of the doing the busy work and you put the CEO hat on, your whole world is going to change. That's what she did. And she, all of a sudden, she said, opportunities came up. And I started realizing that I don't have to do all the little stuff, you know, being in the weeds all the time. I can really do what's important to my company. And I never forgot that. I never will forget that. I would never do that again to anybody. And I just, oh my God, Denise, I was like a puddle because I felt so bad. I would never do that. I would never disrespect somebody. And then I did.
I am so glad you're sharing this story because we all do it. And I wanted to go back to the top of the hour when we were talking about, you know, leadership, kind of leadership that you're talking about. It's not just for women, it's for men too. Mm-hmm. And I had a very similar kind of a conversation not so very long ago with my Wednesday podcast co-host, Ben Gay III, who had, the closers, sales Bibles, parts one and part two. And we talk about mostly we're dissecting the closers part two every week. And this honest to God happened. I'm still shocked by it. But at the end of it, I always call my guests to say thank you. And, you know, do you need to come back? And is there anything you want the audience to know? It's a courtesy call. Plus, you know, that's where a lot of the magic happens too. So I called Ben and he was talking to me in a voice that he's never used with me before because we're friends. We have been friends, but it was a very almost stern voice. He said, Denise, you're going to write a book. And I went, no, I'm not. Kind of like, you're like, what? He said, Denise, you're going to write a book and it's going to be part of the Closer series, which is huge credibility for me. And he just offered it. He said, you're going to write a book. It's going to be the Closers part four. And I'm condensing a bit. It didn't quite go like that, but it's, you know, close enough. And when he was through talking with me, I went, okay, guess what I'm writing? I'm writing the Closers part four. And it's because this is a man who I trust implicitly.
Right.
I didn't argue with him. I just said, okay. Yeah. And then I sat down and shook for a while. I really did. I was clutching my stomach going, what the heck? And then I started writing. Because I can't let him down. I cannot.
And that's what I'm saying. You know, if you had come back with some snarky remark, you would have been disrespecting somebody that you really care about. And that's what this whole thing is about. You know, I always say that the best leaders are the ones that challenge you, the ones that, you know, make you do things that, or at least make the suggestions for you to consider, but they also love you when you need the love. And, you know, and I just want to be the person that people can count on, that I'm going to make an impact. I'm going to be valuable, because once I'm not doing it. I just lose everything I'm doing, because I'm just a person like a lot of other people that just show up and say, okay, so what did you do? And where are you now? And blah, 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 you know, okay, thanks. See you next week. That's not coaching. And that's not being somebody that's valuable to you. So it's just a weird thing. You know, you ask, what's your best teacher? The best teacher you ever had is the hardest teacher you ever had, because they challenge you. And they ask you these questions and they make suggestions because they know what you're capable of, and they see the potential way before you see it. And that's the interesting part.
Isn't that the truth? People will say things to me, I'm like, where did that come from? Because we don't see ourselves the way other people see us. We just don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes it takes that smack in the head to go, Denise, Judy, are y'all paying attention?
Like, where are you? You're not on this world. You're not on this planet. Where are you? Yeah.
Yeah. You're missing some great stuff. I mean, and I'll say this about my podcast. I get to meet people from all over the world, from all walks of life. And you guys are my mentors. Without exception, you are my mentors. I learn so much from listening to you, from reading what you're doing, from having your books on my entrepreneurial bookshelves over here. I wouldn't miss this for the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have others that show up and they don't say anything. I had a woman who is a chatty Cathy. I mean, I know she talks. And when she came on I was live radio at the time. When she came on my radio show, I asked her a question, going, oh my God, what a great question. Yes.
Huh?
And I'm waiting. And my producer's in my ear going, is she still there? I said, I think so. You know, and so I said, would you like to expand that? And she said, no, that's, yeah, no. And I said, okay, so what about it? Let's think of it this way, blah, 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 blah. She said, great question. And then she says, no, mm-mm. And this is how it went for 1 hour, just like that. And when I got off, I said to my producer, I need a drink. He goes, I need the bottle. Because we had, and then she says at the end, she goes, wow, this was such a great show.
Oh my.
And I thought, well, I don't know about that. So yeah, not everybody is going to be your mentor. Because that one would not.
No, I had something not similar, but many years ago when I first starting out, that I understood fairly quickly that people are going to want to use my podcast as a billboard, which I'm more than willing to do at the very end. And, you know, I'll ask you, where can people find you? They'll talk about your book, blah, 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 blah. But this woman, God bless her, everything I asked her, she, well, if you'll just go to my website. Oh. And I finally just shut it down. And she called me. She said, I don't know what happened. I said, I stopped it because, you know, you were not being of service to the audience. She said, well, I can come back. I said, no, ma'am. You can't. And I wouldn't let her come back.
You could try, but I'm not going to be open to it.
Yeah, and she bugged me. I mean, she did. She bugged me for a solid 6 months, I think. And finally, I just had to say, this is why you can't come back on the show. I don't like you. And that was the end of that. She finally got the message, and I didn't like her.
I
So
love that. I
there's
love it.
sometimes you just have to be a bit brutal to get the message across. So, Judy, as a trusted leader, what essential qualities or actions, and I think we've covered some, do you believe are necessary to reach the top position, no matter if you're by yourself or like me, you have a team, but they're remote, or you're in a corporate office? What are those essential qualities?
Well, there's lots of different qualities that some people find are, using air quotes here, leadership, like integrity and, the normal ones. But when I was writing Walking on the Glass Floor, and I'm only saying that because I want to say where it's coming from, the qualities that I talked about are things that people generally don't look at as leadership, like passion, like courage, like generosity, like resilience. And if I was doing something more now, and if I was adding more to that, I would add empathy. I mean, you have to be empathetic, innovative, things like that, that people would look at and say, wow, this is great, being led to doing something that's innovative. Collaboration, confidence. I mean, oh my goodness, confidence, ambition. These are things, sometimes these are dirty words that people don't talk about. And yet, now we're all talking about it. So some of those things are, we can't forget about those qualities, because you have to be able to do that in order to see a transformation in somebody else. You have to be able to cultivate confidence. You have to be able to embrace ambition. You have to be able to encourage collaboration, because those are the things that will make a good leader a great leader. If you think about a leadership, it's not really about the title or the authority that you have. A lot of it is about inspiration. How do you inspire and empower others to reach their potential? Just what we were talking about. That's a great leader, not just a good leader. That's a great leader. So, and also about, you have to challenge the status quo. Denise, you're going to write a book. Judy, you're going to write a book. Well, status quo is, no, I'm not. Well, yeah, you're going to.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of things.
Scared the heck out of me, but I went, okay, in a
Okay,
very,
I'm going to do that.
I
Yes.
think I said it just like, okay.
Please, sir, can I have some more?
I'm not normally, weenie like, but I just went, but once I heard why he wanted me as part of this series, I just went, oh my God, he has that much faith in me. I cannot let him down.
And that's how it works. And he, what one of the things that he was doing is, from listening to your conversation about it, is he was leading by example. He wasn't just saying to you, okay, you need to write a book, and because it's going to be good for you, and you need to write a book. But he was telling you something as a leader and leading by example, and that is huge. The best leaders are the ones that people want to follow. People are not going to follow anyone. They have to have a reason, and you trust him, and trust is like a major deal. So.
Oh, very much so. And I wanted to add, the essential qualities that we were talking about. For me, it's listening, which I think is part of empathy. Just sit back and listen and then chime in if you feel the need to. But listening, I don't think, I know that so many people just don't listen. They're just waiting. You can almost see them hunched over their phone or ho hunched over their keyboard. Okay, finish so I can hop in. Stop doing that. That doesn't work.
No. And the one of the things that, I mean, active listening is very difficult. It's one of the most difficult things for somebody to do, to actively listen. And so one of the things that I've always, I've done, but I also tell my clients, is when you're with someone, just say, is it okay if I take notes? What are they going to say to you? They're going to say yes, or they're going to say no. No one has ever said, please don't take notes. Ever. And so what I do is I am listening carefully, because there's something that you're going to say that if I'm not actively listening, it's going to blow right by me. But to you, it was like the most important piece that you wanted to get out today that you needed to say to me. So I listen and I take copious notes. And what I do is I write down things in your words. And so when we have this next part of the conversation, you know, when we start to co-create something or when we start to just go back and forth and talk about what's possible and what the potential is, I will probably say something that you just said to me. And most of the time, the reaction I get is, how did you know that? I mean, I was just listening. That's all I was doing was listening. And people, you know, the best compliment that a salesperson can get, which is also a leader, is, wow, you really listened. Because it's very different when you listen. And you're right. That is like a huge quality.
It is. And I'm so glad you mentioned taking notes, because when I'm listening to my guests, I'm listening to you now, I have a notepad or note, well, it's a what's one of those little composition books that mm-hmm. is strictly for my podcast. And I'll open up a blank page and yours says Judy Hoberman, and I'm taking notes the whole time we're talking.
Yeah. And that's what we do. But don't you think that makes sense? Because now you can go back. You know, we can have just a general conversation, not even on a podcast. And you can say, hey, you know, the last time we were talking, you mentioned something to me and I wanted to circle back with you. Although I hate the word circle back. Yeah. But I wanted to review something that you said,
there you
blah,
go.
Blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, wow, did I really say all that? You know, or did I even talk about that? I must have, because you've got notes on it. And sometimes the things that I say, you're not going to find it on my website. You're not going to find it in, you know, any place else. It would have to be something that I had, that I said in a conversation. And so that to me, I just think it's amazing.
But we have to listen. And mm-hmm. I, like I say, you guys become my mentors, no question about it. And I listen very carefully to what you have to say. I read your book. So you're somebody that I know, like, and trust.
Right back at you, sister.
Thank you. So what strategies have you found? We're going to talk about increasing sales figures now. Mm-hmm. What strategies have you found most effectively in rapidly increasing sales figures? Because you're in sales. Mm-hmm. Ben Gay III is in sales. I'm about to be in sales. I probably always was and didn't recognize it. Mm-hmm. But what strategies work for you that you share with your people?
Do you want to know the biggest strategy?
Yeah.
Stop selling.
I know. Okay. Right. Keep going.
Okay. Stop selling. Because this is what, you know, so many people say sales are hard. Sales are not hard, because if you're, you know, if you're jamming something down somebody's face and throat, yeah, they're hard. The reason I say stop selling is because sales is nothing more than a conversation. That's all it is. And in that conversation is what we just talked about, is asking questions and listening. That's the most important part of it. When you're in, you know, if you want to increase your sales, you have to be interested in someone, not interesting to them. Okay, there's a big difference. So when somebody's talking, you don't want to pipe in and go, okay, so when I did this, no, you need to be interested in them. You ask them an open-ended question and then you stop talking and you start to listen. If you start to do that, the conversation is going to be a lot different than you anticipated, because there's going to be some things that, as the client, I might say to you, and maybe it's going to take the conversation in a different direction, or maybe you're going to ask me a question and I'm going to take it in a different direction. It doesn't matter, but it generally goes in more directions than you can possibly imagine. So when I was selling insurance, I had to ask questions like, why is this important today? Like, just tell me that. And then I'd stop asking any questions, because you're going to say things to me. I heard this and I did that and I didn't have insurance for this, or, you know, whatever it is. And then I'm going to ask you another question, because I need to really think about what it would be that I would be able to offer to you that's going to be of value to you. With that said, after you do what we call fact finding, everybody's ready to just jump in and let's do that. Okay, let's close now. Let's close. But that's where you're going to get into trouble. Because if you just decide, okay, I've asked my questions, I got what I want to sell, now I'm going to close it, you're going to miss the most important part. And so I always talk about the four words you ask that will change the impact of your sales conversation. So after you've done this comment back and forth, you're going to say these four words, but not before you have to say it before you decide to close. Okay. This is before that. You're not going to close and then say this. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
Okay, good. So you do your fact finding and then you say, is there anything else? That's it. Don't roll your eyes. Don't go, what? No, because when I say that, when I'm doing like a training, they're going, oh my God, that's ridiculous. I say, okay, here's what happens. If I said to you, is there anything else? 9 times out of 10, someone's going to say, actually, there is. What I heard about your company, or what I heard about this policy, or what I heard about this, or whatever it is. And whatever they tell me, I always say, that's a really good point. So let me address that. And I do. Is there anything else? Well, yes, my sister told me blah, 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 and I should be looking for this. Great question. So let me show you how this works. Da, 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 da. Is there anything else? And it's like a tennis match. 3 or 4 times it goes back and forth. And then I will say, is there anything else? And again, 9 times out of 10, the person will say to me, wow, that's exactly what I want.
Because you heard them, address their issues,
yes.
And now they feel better.
Yes. And I didn't have to close, because they are the ones that realize, yes, this is exactly what I was looking for. Now, if it's not what they're looking for, or you can't do better for them, or, give them something more that they need, I always say, if you can't leave them better off, leave them alone. And so many times when I've done that, I have gotten more referrals than you can possibly imagine, because people would say, oh my goodness, she did not force me into anything. She talked about everything and told me what she had was not as good as what I already have. And there you go. I mean, you have to be honest. You have to be authentic. You have to, be real, but you also have to listen and stop selling. Just have a conversation. I've never, in all my years, I have never, ever, ever, ever sold anybody anything. All I did was have conversations. And I was the number one salesperson. I was the number one recruiter. I was the number one agency manager. Because all I did was I would have conversations and I did not sell.
And I love what you said about maybe what you're offering them is not in their best interest, which is where a lot of salespeople just go, yeah, but they're with my commission. Listen, yeah. I turn away a lot of work for web development and for social media marketing because I'm not your best person for this. But I will say, listen, I'm not going to be able to do what you're asking for. But I think I know a few people who can.
Exactly.
I'll refer them away.
Absolutely. And then, there's always that other part, when you're doing something that is going to affect somebody's life, like insurance, when they say, I'm just going to think about it. And you've done everything you can. You're not selling it. You're trying to ask the questions. Is there anything else? And da, 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 da. I always say, okay, so today we are, it's Monday at 11 o'clock and it seemed to be a good time for us. Why don't we meet next Monday at 11 o'clock? And between then and now, or now and then, if you have any questions, well, contact me. And they'll say one of three things. That's perfect. I can't do 11, but I could do 2. Or no, I don't think so. When you get the, I don't think so. This is what I have always done. I will always say to them, can you just do me one favor? Yes. Okay. I know how important this is. And I know what can happen when you're not covered and you're not protected. So can you promise me that you will either work with a friend, I will give you a referral to somebody else, because maybe it's me, I'm not sure. Or will you promise you will get coverage somewhere? Because this is too important. And most of the time they'll say, it isn't you. It's just that I don't have the money and I'm not sure when I'm going to be able to afford it. I'm like, okay, because there's other ways we could do that.
Yeah,
right.
That's a condition. That's not
right.
a.
No, yeah, that's no. Right. But when they say, only one person says, yeah, I'll take a referral. And then, so I knew it was me. But if they say, I'll do that, because I had to be able to take that pressure off me. Like, if God forbid something happened to somebody that I wasn't able to cover because they weren't ready or anything else, I would be, really killing myself, because I should have been more forceful. I'm not forceful. But if I give them the out and they say to me, yeah, I promise I'm going to do this, I say, okay, then I'm going to check on you in 30 days. And I do. And I check. And if they still haven't done it, I'll say, okay, are you ready to work with me again? Because I don't want anybody to ever get into that situation. Because people do. I mean, if you sell life insurance, somebody dies. There's nothing you could do about it. But if you were there and you didn't offer it, because a lot of people, they just, I'm only going in for, health insurance, or I'm only going for long-term care. I'm not going to talk about life. At least tell them you have it. So that's the thing. I always try to make sure that if I'm not the right person, someone else is, and somebody else will do it. And that's, you know, and then I feel better.
And that makes perfect sense. I mean, our roles as salespeople, and I've reluctantly over the years decided that, yeah, I'm in sales. We all are. Watch a 3-year-old get its own way. Seriously. The 3-year-old's going to win every time.
That's right.
So take some cues from them. But once we decide that we are in sales, whether we're selling, you know, websites, we're selling insurance, we're selling, hey, anything, you want to come on my podcast, we have to understand how we're approaching people and how we can actually be of assistance to them. If we're just, you know, in there, excuse me, and we're looking for the commission or we're looking for the sale. I don't know about you, Judy. Hang on a second. Losing my voice. My spidey sense just hits the ceiling. I'm like, oh, you didn't. And I think a lot of people are kind of twigging to that. Like, no, there's something about this that doesn't feel right to me.
Right. And if something doesn't feel right, don't do it. I mean, really, don't do it. I would never expect somebody. And if they did, if they bought something from you, if they said, okay, Denise, do my website for me. And even though they don't want to do it, or there's something going on either part of you, either you or them, if they find somebody else, they're going to drop you like a hot potato.
And badmouth you while they're at it.
All everywhere. And I've had to fire clients because all of a sudden they show up as somebody else. And I'm like, what the heck? Who is this? Yeah. I don't like that.
No. And, you know, firing clients is going to be in your best interest. Yeah. But it's something you have to do. It's painful and nobody likes it, but you've got to get out all you can get out. So yeah, I agree with you. So let's talk about your organization. So when it comes to retaining top talent within your organization, what approaches have you implemented that have proven successful? What should people be writing down? Are y'all listening to me? Write this down.
Know your people. You have to know the reason that they decided to work with you or come to your company or whatever it is, but you have to know your people. When I would recruit people, there's many things I would do, but the very first thing I would ask is, you know, what are the 3 things you can expect from me? And what are the 3 things I can expect from you? And it gave me a, you know, like that light bulb moment. Because if somebody said to me, well, I want to get all the leads and I don't, you know, I want you to not care if I don't show up for training or things like that. I'm like, yeah, that's not even happening. Not happening.
They really say that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, they do. And that, so that they're not my people. But I would always find out what their journey was. And I would say to them, tell me why you came to this company and what you plan on doing with it. And there's always, you know, number 3 always comes up for me, but there's always 3 things they would say. Number 1, they would say, and I'm using air quotes, I just want to be a producer. I don't want to have to manage people. I just want to worry about myself. I said, great, I will show you the journey. Or number 2, they would say, I want to go into management. And I'd ask them why. And then I'd say, okay, great, I will show you the journey. Number 3, they would say, I want your job. And I would laugh. And I would say, I will absolutely show you the journey. Because a great leader is one that promotes themselves out of their position anyway, which would be fine with me. So those are the 3 things. But I already knew what brought them to the dance. And I already knew what was expected of both of us. But the other thing I always did was I would always ask if the person had a partner, a spouse, whomever, I would say, I want to meet them. Because many times we would have to work on a weekend and I wanted them to know who that person was working with, which would have been me or somebody on my team. When you do things like that and you are giving them the training that they need, or you're offering different ways to make them better, more successful, retention is right there. When you say, okay, once you start with me, you're going to have this available to you, whether it's something in a portal, whether it's an assessment, whatever it is, and we're going to make sure that you're following the journey that you're choosing. All of a sudden, it's not like just any other company, because no one else is doing this. No one else is doing the assessments. No one else is doing the journey. No one else is doing that. So if it was a choice of this or this, they're going to come this way. So that's how you bring them in, but then you have to put your money where your mouth is. You have to invest in your people. And I always did. You know, I always did. I'm not going to say that I was there 24/7 because I'm not, but I always had, they had open access to me during working hours. And if they needed anything other than that, they had, you know, there was, I mean, we didn't have Slack by then, back then, but there were different ways that they can communicate with me. And I would get back to them in a reasonable amount of time. But I was always there. If they were doing a trade show or something, I would show up. If they were, you know, looking to get promoted, I would show up. My clients now, if they're doing something, if they're, you know, launching a book or they're, I'm right there with them because I want them to know that they can count on me and I can count on them. And that's when people stay with you.
When that makes sense. I found out a long, long time ago that in my company, in my little business, I was the bottleneck.
Mm-hmm.
Big time. Because I have a habit, well, it's a rule, that I never ask anybody on my team to do something that I can't do myself, or at least have some knowledge of how to do it. Because I'm a techie person. I'm a techie mm-hmm. nerd, stilettos. But I was asking them to do things my way and not asking for their responses. Now, these people, I came to realize, are experts at what they're doing. I can't keep up with all the changes. I don't want to.
Right.
They do one thing or two things, and they do them remarkably well. I was trying to do 180 things quasi well. It wasn't working. And once I went, oh, my goodness, because I was having no feedback at all. They were going, okay, and they'd do it. But I could feel that they hated me. I really could. And I just got everybody on a Zoom call and said, I recognize that I'm stifling you guys and I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Can you advise me? Can you give me updates on what's happening in this particular area of web development or, you know, techie things that are going on? And boy, the floodgates opened, and many of them have been with me for a decade or better
mm-hmm.
because I got out of my own way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Years ago, I went to this event and there was a guy that was doing personality testing. And so, of course, I wanted to get my personality tested.
I don't. And,
well, I just wanted to see where, you know, where, well, but, and I do a lot of them, but anyway, he does this and he says to me, you know, you're really good here, 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 but there's one place that you really suck. And I said, what's that? He said, you are in the weeds. You need to get yourself a good old fashioned executive assistant because you're doing things you should not be doing. I went, okay, that makes sense. Okay. Never did anything. About 4 years later, I was at a different event and there he was. And I thought, I wonder if I've changed at all. And so I did my assessment and I bring it up to him and he looks at me as if to say, you look familiar. And then he looks down and he said, oh my God. He said, you have an A in all of these things, but this one, you have an F because I told you 4 years ago, you should have gotten an executive assistant. And he just goes on and on and he absolutely nailed it. Okay. So he said to me, you need to do this. I got it. Okay. I got it. Of course I didn't do anything right away, but I said, the next place I go, if somebody says to me, you got to get out of the weeds, I'm going to do something. And of course I went to a mastermind and I was on the hot seat the first day. And the first thing that everybody in the room said is, you are in the weeds. And that was the end of it. So I went and I put an ad into, I think it was Upworks. And I said, the title was, please help me get out of the weeds. I had 25 people apply. And I had just said, you know, okay, this wasn't right. This wasn't right. This wasn't right. And I said, I got to find somebody. And then I was down to five and I did pick somebody, but it was very hard for me to let somebody do what I do that was in the weeds. And because the person I hired, she didn't communicate the way I would want to be communicated to. And so I said to her, you know, you really have to not just do things. You need to let me know what it is you're doing. She goes, well, then that's going to take a lot more time. She says, I will give you something at the end of the week. And I said, okay, but it still didn't sit well with me. So I said, you know what? Every Friday, we're going to meet for 15 minutes and just tell me what's going on. That's it. And we do. We meet every Friday. It's been years now. Every Friday we meet for 15 minutes. Sometimes it goes into 30, but really 15 minutes. And it's just, okay, here's what's going on. Here's what I've done. I'm already, you know, way past on this, like blah, 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 blah. And I feel much better.
I am so glad you shared that because it is difficult. I'm an A-type personality. I'm not bossy. I have leadership skills, darn it. That's my story. It's hard to give up stuff. It really is. It's like, oh, you know, I can do that in 5 minutes. Well, you 5 minute yourself into oblivion by the end of the day and you think, what did I get done? Well, I was in the weeds all day long.
Yeah. And
doing stupid stuff.
But isn't it easier for you to just do it? It's just easier because I have to explain it and then it's not the right way and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't. And for anybody who's listening, they want to hire a social media manager or a virtual assistant. Let me tell you something. You must train them.
Yes.
Write it down. You must train them. They don't read your mind. They're not, you know, as Judy just said, they're not going to communicate with you the way you want them to until you train them. You better have everything listed that you're going to want from them and show them how to do it and work with them. And don't just go, well, that didn't work, and go right back to being in the weeds. Work with them.
Right. And it's not always going to be, it doesn't have to always be your way or the highway, because sometimes they do have a better way to do it, or, you know, different way. We used to do training, and I mean, we trained on Medicare, and Medicare is a beast. It really is. It's the most complicated program for the most complicated demographic. And so you really have to have the patience to actually sell Medicare. So we were training on Medicare, and we would do like 16 cities in 17 days of an 8-hour training. And that was horrible, but, you know, that was what we had to do. And so one time on my team, and I was in charge of all the teams, but on my team, somebody got sick. So we pulled somebody in from a different team, and you knew exactly what was supposed to happen, what the stories were, exactly how to say it. And, you know, and we divided into like four different people. So you weren't hearing the same person for 8 hours. Okay. So we had this man who came onto our team, and I'm sitting in the back listening, and I am taking notes like feverishly, like writing. He didn't say this. He didn't do this. I'm writing this stuff. And then my pen ran out of ink. And so I started listening to him.
I know where this is going.
And he actually was very interesting, and he was funny, and he got everything done the way it needed to get done, the same outcome, just differently. And I walked up to him, and all I said to him was, I need to apologize to you. And he said, what? Why? And then I told him why. And I said, you really did some great things, and I'm going to incorporate some of the things that you did, and I really appreciate it. And I'm sorry I didn't, you know, listen right away, because it didn't have to be exactly my way. It didn't. If the outcome would have been different, yes, it would have had to been my way, but it was just different. And we started pulling him into our team whenever we needed somebody, because he was funny, and he was good, and people liked him, and he did what he needed to do. So there you go.
Listening there, and we keep bringing that up, you know, write it down, listen, and cultivate some patience. That's hard for people like you, for people like me. I'm not the most patient person in the world, and I know this, but when I do sit down and go, huh, things happen.
Yeah. And when you think you've listened enough, listen some more.
Exactly. Judy, I sincerely appreciate your company today, and spending time with you is always a pleasure. Do you have any last thoughts to share, and how can listeners connect with you on the web, and where can they find your books?
So you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm Judy Hoberman on LinkedIn. You can go to my website for my books, because then you'll get it signed, or you can go to Amazon and you won't get it signed. It's really up to you. It's, you know, it's no difference, but that a lot of people like it, you know, overnight, that's fine. I would just say that one of the things that we really, really encourage people is to dare to be number one. Really, you know, take that dare upon yourself. Just say, I'm going to be number one, whatever number one means, but you dare to be number one. It really means leading by example and embodying the values and the principles that you want to see in others. That's what it means. You know, I think that when you dare to be number one, you're not only achieving your own goals, but you're paving the way for future generations so they can thrive and they can succeed. And so take that challenge among yourself and just say, I'm going to be number one.
When did you decide you were going to be number one? Was there a special moment, or was it just always in you, but had to be kind of brought out.
I think it was always in me, but I have always been told I was never going to amount to anything. So it took a long time to get rid, you know, that. Yeah. But, you know, I'm not saying be number one so you can be obnoxious and, you know, all of that. I'm saying be number one for yourself. You just want to do what you do and do the best that you can do. And when you have trouble, just remember, you don't have to do things alone and you shouldn't do things alone. It takes a village. I mean, you know, I have two coaches at all times. I have a male and I have a female. Female because I work a lot with women, and male because I need a male perspective. I can't do this alone. I can't. I have to have coaches or a mentor. You said you have everybody that comes on your show are mentors. You're not doing this alone either. So people don't have to do it alone. You don't have to, you know, say, well, I have to go out and spend millions of dollars on this. No, you don't have to do that. Find yourself a mentor. Find yourself a coach. Find yourself, you know, a strategic partner. Find yourself an accountability person. But don't do it alone, because you're going to miss some of the greatest moments, because you're going to be constantly looking at in the past and in the future. And you're going to forget and you're going to miss exactly what's here right this moment.
Exactly. And everything you just mentioned, do all of those.
And then some.
One, do all of them and listen and then write it down. Well, listen to our audience as we conclude today's episode. Your feedback means a lot to me. And if you found the show helpful, please support us with a quick review on iTunes. And this is why I ask. Your input is vital in my mission to inspire and empower more individuals. So don't forget to hit subscribe. Leave a review and share your Partner in Success Radio with friends and colleagues. And be sure to find Judy Hoberman on the web, read her books, and connect with her. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you next week. Judy, again, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.